Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with truly interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, authors, speakers, web developers, virtual assistants. Honestly, they're anybody that has a great story to share, and they're, you know, really excited to freely share their business wisdom, their journey, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome Tina Dietz to the podcast. I love this story. When she was 2 years old, someone handed our guest Tina a tape recorder, and that was that. A lifelong love affair was born. And today she is an internationally acclaimed business coach, audiobook publisher and launch specialist, podcast producer, and a best-selling author who has been featured on ABC, Inc.com, Huffington Post, and Forbes. Her podcast, The Start Something Show, was named one of the top podcasts for entrepreneurs on Inc.com, and her company, Start Something Business Solutions, helps clients who want more than just a business and more than just a routine life. They want a business oasis. I'm going to ask her what a business oasis is. And as part of her own business oasis, Tina lives in the U.S., Canada, and Costa Rica. Now, that's traveling with a laptop, I think. So good morning, Tina, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Denise.
Well, you know, we have a mutual friend, Meredith Bell, and she introduces me to the
lovely.
Most amazing,
yes.
Isn't she? When she says, oh, I want you to, you know, I would love to introduce you to this person, they would be a great guest, I don't even bother to do a pre-interview. I'm like, good. If she says you're good, you're coming on the show. So, you know, that's, you know, high praise for both of you. So, anyway,
She's a great guest, too, yeah.
She is, and she's just an amazing connector. Before we get started, Tina, did I miss anything in the intro that's really important?
Oh, you can talk about me all day, and I'll happily listen to it. So, you know, no problem there. But, yeah, we...
gotcha.
Oh, you want to say nice things about me? Yeah, do that. That'd be good. Thank
yeah,
you.
I know, huh? Works all day long, huh? Well, listen, you have got quite a story. I mean, you're living, you know, across the world, which I think a lot of people would love to know how to do that. And you've got these great businesses. And I really do want to talk to you at some point. One of the biggest set of questions I have for you, I think, is about, you know, audiobooks. I think that's a big, big growth industry. But before we get started, tell the audience a bit more about yourself, and then we are off to the races. I have a ton of questions, by the way.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, no, whenever somebody asks me, tell me a bit more about yourself, my sense of humor automatically goes to saying something like, well, I was born in a small farm in Tennessee or something like that, but that's totally untrue. So the truth is that I grew up as an entrepreneur in my parents' wood-burning stove and fireplace shop, very sexy business. You know, I was the only kindergartner who knew what double wall stovepipe was, which does not make you popular, I can guarantee you that. And was just kind of steeped in this entrepreneurial mindset for my entire upbringing, and then became a therapist because I was determined I was not going to be an entrepreneur because my parents had a brick-and-mortar business that they worked 80 hours a week in, and I'm an only child, and as far as I was concerned, that business was my aggravating younger sibling. But when I got out into the real world, I found that not everybody thinks like an entrepreneur does. And I had just developed all of these ways of being and all of these ways of visioning things and getting things done that it really became inevitable that I had to work for myself because it was totally unemployable. By the way that I was just determined to get things done and take action and really don't have a lot of patience for bureaucracy. So that is how I ended up working for myself. And much like yourself, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and everything led me back to working with people on their businesses. And even when I was, had other businesses that involved products and whatnot, I'd get involved in the community and then help other people build their businesses. So that is what had me step off and start doing business coaching and strategy, which I still do and have done for many years. But then it was my joy and love of being behind the microphone and acting and singing as I grew up doing that actually led me to the world of audiobooks. And I've been a voice actor for many years. It's always been a kind of a side gig because I don't live in New York or L.A. or the big markets where doing that full-time becomes much more feasible. However, I was trained in audiobook narration and learned the back end of that industry. And at that time, that was really when the boom of becoming a best-selling author had started. Amazon had opened up their publishing platform for self-publishing. The rules of the game of publishing completely changed. But I saw this gap where my colleagues and my clients were not turning their books into audiobooks. And so that actually led me to do some research on that topic and see where that was, why that was, and most people didn't even know what their options were, how little it costs, that you don't have to narrate it yourself, or that audiobooks sell three times more than ebooks. And so when I launched that arm of my business, it took over my business very, very quickly in the best possible way. So now that is mostly where I spend my time doing is helping people get their audiobooks produced, get them marketed, and also get their podcasts strategically positioned and launched, because everything I do is really around helping people unleash that voice that is authentic to them, that makes them unique in the world, and that helps them connect with the right audience and then with the subsequent growth in their business that what happens.
And I love that because I listen to audiobooks. I have to tell you, I never listen to anything other than business books as an audiobook. I'm not interested. If I'm reading a biography or a novel or a murder mystery, I'm addicted to murder mysteries. I kill people off all the time. I love them. I started with Agatha Christie when I was a child, and you give me a good murder mystery, and I am just, I'm in it. I'm in the middle of it and trying to work it out and figure out who done it. And, they're brain teasers for me. But opening a book for me is a very, is a very personal experience. I want to smell it. I want to, even if I'm on an e-reader.
Exactly.
I want to, the words that I'm reading are actually creating images and thoughts and scenes in my mind. A business book, however, is a completely different animal, as I'm sure you know. And I'm actually listening, almost to how to do things and, listening to the passion and the author's voice or whoever's reading it. I mean, just to give you an example, Brendan Bouchard, got his first book. I have books everywhere. It sat on my desk for the longest kind of time, and I thought, I'm going to read it. And I started to, but for some reason, it didn't really resonate with me, The Charge. Then I got it on audiobook.com, and I heard him. I heard the passion. I heard his voice crack. I heard the tears in his eyes when he was, the tears in his voice when he was talking about his story. He got me with the audiobook. Then I went back and I read the book. But I think for business in particular, you've got to have an audiobook out there. And that's my experience with it. I'd love to hear what you've got to say about why it's really important.
Well, first of all, you're hired, because that's exactly the experience that I hear from so many people.
Right.
And else is my own experience. Like, I'm a voracious fiction reader. Books have been my best friend since right around that same time somebody handed me that microphone and that tape recorder when I was 2 is also when the world of books opened up for me. And so it's really no coincidence that those two things have basically become what my company is known for and the driving passion for me to help other people. But audiobooks, are just what you said, allow people, particularly in the world of nonfiction, to get into the voice and to have that trusted advisor in their ear. Your introduction mentioned the know, like, and trust economy, and this goes right along with that, where it doesn't have to necessarily be the author's voice, but it needs to be infused with the author's spirit. And that's one of the things that we do, because sometimes the author is voicing the book more than often, though, because of the learning curve involved and the intensity of time involved in narrating your own book, what we do is we have a tribe of narrators who really are actors and who are extremely heartfelt and very, very good at what they do. And we make sure that the voice of that author, that spirit, comes through in that narration 100%, so that the author feels almost as though they could replace themselves with that narrator. And that becomes very important, because when we are as teachers, as thought leaders, speakers, whatever the case may be, and we've written a book, and we are granted access directly into somebody's ears, we are granted access directly into their brain. And we become
Absolutely.
A voice in their ear, literally, not just figuratively. And that makes everything far more effective, just like the experience that you have listening to audiobooks. And I'm the same way. I will read fiction voraciously, but if it's nonfiction, particularly business, I have a very hard time getting through it unless I listen to it. And once I listen to it, almost inevitably, I will go back, and if I love the book, I'll go and buy the hard copy of the book. And that's very representative of the market as well. People tend to, when they love a piece of work, they will buy it in more than one version.
Oh, I do that. I mean, I follow that same path. I want nonfiction, don't talk to me, but I want to read it. But business books, I need to hear it, and you know, and I can compartmentalize. I may be building a website, I may be doing social media marketing, but I can, with my left ear only, I don't know how I do this, but with the left side of my brain, I'm listening to, you know, Tony Robbins or Brendan Bouchard or whoever, you know, Larry Wingate, whoever I happen to be listening to that day. And I can compartmentalize, but then I'm like you, and oftentimes, you know, when guests come on my show, a lot of them are authors and speakers, and they will almost always send me copies of their books, hard copies, and they, you know, they sign them for me, and my name is in there, and their name is in there, and those books don't get cracked. You know, those go on. I've got
yeah,
a special
I agree.
Unit, yeah, in my office that all my author signed books. I mean, I have a ton of them. They're all, you know, they're in my office, but then I will go buy the Kindle version if it's available. And I'll buy the paperback version because that's the one I'm going to annotate and mark up and put sticky notes in it. You know, that's the one that's going to really get used and abused. So, yeah, I actually tend to have 3 or 4 versions of every book that I like.
Exactly. And that is very typical of what's happening now in the book market. And one of the reasons that Amazon has made some of the strategic moves that it has on their platform. So Amazon and Audible are under the same umbrella. Audible is the largest audiobook company in the world. Audiobooks.com is actually a far second. And for a number of reasons. But Amazon is such a 500-pound gorilla in the room. They have so many users. They're so dominant in the market that Audible, as one of their, I guess I'll call them child companies or partner companies, has also become the 500-pound gorilla in the room for audiobooks. And in the last even 2 years, they've made some strategic moves that have made a lot of sense. So one of the things that I have done in my company is I'm watching what they're doing, because they're analyzing, they have lots of people working on this. And so when they make a move, I'm paying attention to it. And one of the things that they've done recently, or fairly recently, is they have made it so that if you purchase one version of the book, usually the Kindle or the Audible version, then the opposite version, either the Kindle or the Audible, comes down in price. And
yeah,
that
like
is
$1.99 or something.
Yes,
I've been noticing
exactly.
that
it
too. It's a ridiculous
add-on.
Price, right?
Exactly, it's an add-on. So that has made it, that is because they saw the trend that people were doing and they decided that this was a good trend to push. So now they're pushing that trend, so that actually increases sales across the board on multiple formats of the book. And that's pretty much good for everybody. Yes, and some of the authors out there, I can almost hear them saying, but wait, if they bring the price down, that makes my royalties less. Yes and no, because you're still going to be getting royalties. They might not be as much as if you had, let's say, in the olden days, like we used to do with audiobooks, where you had to package it on multiple CDs and ship it and all of that. Your royalty may have been higher, but your production costs would have been astronomically higher. So when at the end of the day, the author is still benefiting from a volume of sales, even if their percentage is maybe not as high as it once was with the hard copy. Because the hard copy, that's one of the reasons that audiobook sales have skyrocketed year after year after year for the last 5 years, is because audiobooks became almost purely digital. And that is how they're being almost exclusively consumed now, whether that is through Audible and their app, or audiobooks.com, or the library. Those are the big three.
Right, right. And I agree with you about the sheer volume. I mean, even if it comes down as an add-on to, let's just pick $1.99, because I tend to see that quite a bit. But doesn't that make it a lot easier for people to go, oh, well, heck yeah, it's only $2. Heck yeah, I'll buy that. And, you know, then they're talking to somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. And I'm guilty. My hand just shot up in the air. I'll do that. Sure. I'll take that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then they get the book, they consume the book, they start talking about the book or reviewing it. It just seems to me that you've started this whole kind of snowball effect. And yes, maybe you're not getting the bigger bucks, but you're getting a lot bigger, you know, bigger audience, I would think.
Correct. Exactly. And audience size is just as important, if not more important, than your margin of profit. And when it comes to books specifically, because a lot of folks out there, and I'm sure you've seen this with the folks that you've worked with too, when they do a book, I won't even say they'll write a book, they're doing a book. they are many times initially going for a status, a best-selling author status, right? This has become kind of almost a requirement in the business world these days. If you are going to be a thought leader, if you're going to be in what we call the one-to-many conversation, an influencer, then it's pretty much almost become a requirement that you become an author of some kind. And we've been convinced of this fact. And so now this is part of our business culture, especially here in the U.S. and Canada. So if that's the case, then people tend to invest in becoming a best-selling author, whether they're going to be working with a ghostwriter or they're taking a course in how to launch a bestseller. They're investing in marketing to get the numbers up to become a bestseller, the right cover, the foreword, getting endorsements. It's like a birthing process. However, what unfortunately happens is that once that bestseller status is reached, something like 80% of independent authors then kind of drop the book and go, okay, I'm done. And they don't do anything else.
Yep.
Yes.
I have noticed that. So what do you, you know, what is your best advice for that? Because I have clients that, you know, they kind of, well, you know, it was number one on Amazon in this category and this category. Didn't reach New York Times status. It wasn't meant to, I don't think. But then all of a sudden they're off to something else, and I'm going, hey, whoa, 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 come back. Come back. We're not done here.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Amazon bestseller status and New York Times bestseller status are two totally different strategies. That's probably a whole conversation for another show.
Mm-hmm. And we will do that too, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's a whole other show. But and I actually should probably bring on one of my colleagues for that, Teresa de Gerbois or Ellen Rogan, who both know that world, you know, much intimately. So, but in terms of Amazon bestseller, or Amazon international bestseller, which is what most people are going for, this is the question I like to ask. So imagine if Stephen Covey, when he had written Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, had just gone for bestseller status and never done anything else with it. It's unthinkable, right? It's
unthinkable. Really is, because he's created this entire leadership lifestyle around that book.
He created an empire, a global empire off of one book.
And what about the Chicken Soup for the Soul books?
Concept.
You know, same,
same
type of
chicken
thing.
Soup for the
yeah.
Soul. Yeah,
right.
Except Chicken Soup for the Soul became Chicken Soup of Everything.
Right.
Slightly different strategy. But that Chicken
yeah,
Soup
they
for
lost
the Soul
me after a while.
Was the launch of the compilation book, which has also become very ubiquitous in business world, in the business world, where everybody writes a chapter, right? I've done that. Every single one of my colleagues has participated in one of those books. It's another strategy that we use to become known, to build credibility. It's a great strategy. But going back to Stephen, you know, that is the disservice that authors tend to make to themselves and to their work, is not going back to that book and saying, okay, I went through this whole process. I birthed this baby, and now I'm quite literally throwing the baby out with the bathwater, not going back to it and just kind of expecting it to raise itself, expecting it to just sit there on a shelf as a status symbol rather than being an asset to my enterprise. And that's what we want to do with the audiobook. So the audiobook is a huge asset that is a way to leverage somebody's work. Now, I like to do it in a bunch of different ways, too, getting into the business coaching side of things, but focusing for today on the audiobooks, when you're launching a new book, can extend the life of your launch, increases the revenue, and it also acts as its own marketing tool. And audiobooks are almost never free. So unlike a Kindle, which may not have a super high perceived value, audiobooks have a high perceived value. And so they're going to, no one's going to expect that you give your audiobook away for free like they would expect a free Kindle in the business world. So using that as an asset is really important when during your book launch. However, an audiobook can also revive an old title like nothing else, without the author having to create anything new. Or you want to do a second edition and you pair that with an audiobook. Here's a brand new product. You can dig down deeper into your brand, into your principles, into the things that you want to be known for, and not just do the, quote, marketing part of it, but then have a product that's going to generate you income using somebody else's platform. You don't have to build another website for it. You don't have to build a funnel for it. You're using very robust platforms that already exist that you don't have to put technology money into. And that's one of the things I absolutely love. So as far as I'm concerned, if somebody has a good narrative in their book, it's a good candidate for being an audiobook. Because we can do an audio edit of people's books to make sure that it's a good fit for audio. And get that up onto Audible, Amazon, and iTunes so that it can reach people. And then you can just, you know, make more money and reach more people. And that's what we all pretty much want to have happen.
Well, exactly. And the thing with audiobooks, you know, I like to listen. I love music. I'm like, we have so much in common. I was reading at 3. I sing all the time. You know, it's just crazy. We have a lot. We're probably twins and just don't know it. But, you know, the thing is, I want to hear. I'm always wanting to learn. I don't have any problem with silence. I crave silence. But when I want to hear something, I don't want fluff and garbage going in my ear. I just don't.
Right.
I'm very fussy about what I'm willing to listen to and what I'm willing to put into my brain. And, you know, I may be making a gumbo. I may be, you know, mopping the floors. But I've got an audiobook on, and I'm learning something. You know, I've got some of my courses on. You know, I invest in a lot of high-dollar courses. And I'll turn those on my iPad, and I'm listening with that left ear, and I'm learning the whole time. It's very important to get your voice out there. I'm a voracious, lifelong reader, but these days I think it's almost more important because everything is so portable. You can carry your cell phone around with you, your earbuds, your iPad. You know, you can port a lot of stuff over to the smart TV in your living room and listen. It's almost a lifestyle anymore to be listening and learning, isn't it?
Absolutely. Most people are on the go so much. Either we're commuting in cars or subways or walking.
Right.
Or people are trying to, at the gym. They're multitasking in one way or another. And so that is, really the reason for the explosion of audio. And because audio is the most portable form of media, we can listen when we can't read. We can listen when we can't watch. It makes so much sense to be utilizing much as possible. And audiobooks and podcasting, kind of have come up together. And that's why they tend to go hand in hand so often, because people are always looking for new content, new things to listen to, and looking to be entertained as well as learning.
Oh, absolutely. We do have a question in the chat room from James Archer. He wants to know, what is the best basic equipment required to get started with audiobooks and or services, I guess kind of like yours, but if you're just beginning to think about an audiobook, I guess
sure.
Where do you start?
Well, I'm going to do some shameless self-promotion right here. And
of course.
I put together, there is a common back end to Audible, Amazon, and iTunes that's available to people in the U.S. and the U.K. So you can go through and do a DIY self-production. So that's full transparency right there. Is it a large learning curve? Yes, it is. So I put together kind of a full checklist step-by-step with inside information and best practices, and you can download that audiobook production guide at launchyouraudiobook.com. So if you go there, you can download that guide, and I actually send a whole series of articles over a course of 2 weeks, not every day. People don't read things every day, about when to launch, what are the best cases that you want to, produce an audiobook yourself. Do you want to have a narrator do it? A lot of frequently asked questions get answered in the articles that I send as follow-up to that guide. So that would be the first place that I would recommend that you start, because you can go directly to this self-publishing portal. The website is acx.com. It sounds for audiobookcreationexchange.com. And you can wade through all of that. Absolutely, you could totally do that. But it will shortcut the process tremendously if you download the guide that I put together. That's why I designed it, to prevent overwhelm, because we've got 19 things going at the same time, and we need to know exactly what to do. So that would be the first step if you want to kind of demystify the whole process for yourself from a 30,000-foot view and know what it's going to take. As for getting started yourself with audiobook production, before you go ahead and invest in any equipment, and it doesn't have to be a huge investment, I'm more than happy to tell you, I have a very, very simple setup for a professional setup that I've been using for years because I do so much travel, and I had to make it portable. But before you even get to that point, you're going to want to take a look and see if there's any advantage for you to voice your own book or not, because it is a tremendous investment in time and learning curve. Even professional speakers, people who spend a lot of time on the stage, tend to be very surprised at the different skill set that it takes to record an audiobook, especially if you're self-producing and not
right.
going to a studio.
And not only that, but I don't know about you, once I've spoken for about an hour, I'm done. My voice just says, I'm going to go in the backyard now. I'll be back next week.
Exactly.
I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's because I really don't talk all that much. I live alone blissfully, and I really don't have to do all that much speaking unless I'm talking to my cats. But once I've been in a nonstop conversation that's gone on for a while, I'm worn out. Trying to
mm-hmm.
do a book is just terrifying to me just because of that, because I know my vocal cords can't take it.
There is that, and it also it requires a tremendous amount of focus and attention, and especially when it's our own words. When you're reading out loud, many times we replace words automatically as we're reading because we're not reading intently, we're actually skimming the page, particularly when it's our own words. And we don't even notice that we're doing it, but if you do a recording and you listen back and you're proofing your own work, you'll actually find, wait a minute, how did I say like instead of and, or how did I say, you know, is instead of was, and you find all of these little details. So it's an intensive, it's a worthwhile process, but to voice a book yourself is a learning curve. And many people think that, well, I'll voice it myself and it's going to cost me less to do it. That is not the case. It actually, when all is said and done, once you go through the editing process, not even counting your time, it actually doesn't save you money in the long run to voice it yourself by the time you purchase equipment, set things up, and work with an editor, because you will need to work with a professional editor. There's really no way around that. Otherwise, your quality is just not going to be there. It's going to come out pretty even in the wash. So it's many times, if not most times, better to work with a narrator, unless there's a few very special circumstances in terms of who you are and how you're known in the world.
Well, you know, like Larry Wingate. Larry Wingate will actually be on the show again next week. I have all of his audiobooks, but I will only purchase them if it's his voice, because I know him.
Yeah.
And he has that very, very unique voice. Yeah,
and
he there
does,
are cases
and he's also
that,
got a
you know,
huge following.
He does.
When you're talking about
he
somebody
does.
Like Brendan Burchard or Brené mm-hmm. Brown or, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert, somebody like that, who is well, just people know their very, very unique voice. Then we're talking that's going to make a difference. But people at those levels and that level of influence are also very likely to have audiobook contracts through their publishers, and the publishers are actually footing the bill for their production and their editing.
Well, that makes sense.
So it's a different animal, yeah.
All right. Okay, so let me ask this, and this is just an oddball question popped into my head, but is it possible
sure.
to have an audiobook without a physical book? Can you do one without the other?
Generally not, no. Generally not. That actually is an audio program, which is kind of a different animal. And occasionally I run into situations when I'm doing working with someone who wants to do an audiobook in this scenario, and rather than going through Audible, Amazon, iTunes, it would be more of a course development arc, where we would actually be developing a product for sale and having to work through the steps for that, which is a different arc than a book launch. Product launches tend to have a lot of similarities to them regardless. What I really love about launching books and launching audiobooks in particular is because we can leverage other people's platforms and don't have to build all the technology. But that being said, sometimes launching a course or launching an audio program is the best fit. And so then we want to just streamline and simplify as much as possible and use as many of the entrepreneurs or solopreneurs, as the case may be, the strengths that they have, the strengths and skills of their team, to make it as downstream as possible to have the best results.
Now, a lot of times people will do all of this at the same time. They'll have the book, they'll have the course, they'll have the audio book. How is that even possible? I mean, I'm tired just even voicing that sentence. Like, oh my gosh.
Well, I'll use a very popular example, and most folks who are in the business world will probably have heard of Jeff Walker's launch program.
Oh yeah,
and it's
one of those I invested in.
Yes, and it's a fantastic program.
It is.
Jeff Walker has it down. Every step, every note, every motion, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. However, to actually implement a launch, a full launch, not a seed launch, there's different kinds of launches, but a full launch that all with all the pieces that Jeff puts together, it takes about a year to put all of those pieces into place with a team. And so people who are playing at a high level like that, and I can tell you this because I run in these circles and I know this world well, just to pull back the curtain on this, the folks who are doing major launches of products many times are spending anywhere between $70,000 and $150,000 on that launch. So that's what we really have to
know. A lot of people don't recognize that. I mean, you know, Todd Herman's got his big launch out right now. You know, there's a lot of things going on, and I mean, when you look at these things, they're seamless, they're beautiful, they are offering a ton. I mean, when you take these courses, when you invest in these courses, if you do what they ask you to do, you will come out of it okay. But I think a lot of people go in and think, oh, you know, I'm going to be, in 6 weeks, I'm going to be just rolling in the money. I want you to explain to the audience that, yes, it will work, but there are steps that you have to take, and you do have to invest in yourself,
you
in your team,
and you also
your
have
time.
To do it over and over again. You have
exactly.
to do it over and over again, and that's the thing. And that's not necessarily the case what we're talking about with books and audiobooks. This is more in the case with course development and with webinars and teleclasses and those things that you refine and you refine and you refine over time, and you're using a lot of technology in those particular cases. Having been down those paths, I mean, you mentioned I like to have a business oasis, and I can't have a business oasis if I'm working 120 hours a week. It's just not sustainable. So we as entrepreneurs have to find ways to maximize our income, our audience, and our influence, and also leverage what we're really good at and be really strategic about where we're investing. Be really, really strategic about what our growth plan is and how we're going to stake our flag. You know, you got to plant your flag in a space and say, okay, well, if I do a course launch and it doesn't work out the first time, is it because I'm really not resonating with the topic or the audience or whatever, or is it the case that, no, I really know my stuff, and this is something I'm going to need to do again and again and again and have it grow and grow and grow and grow. So, you know, most of the folks that you see who are at the top of their game have, that's exactly what they've done. They, you know, sometimes we get dazzled by the stories. But most of the stories that we hear about people, the middle is glossed over enormously. We don't hear about the struggle and the fall down and the freak out and the eating ramen noodles for half a year and all of those things that happen behind the scenes when you're building something that is built to last. And so, I, you know, coming back around to, you know, why I do what I do is because most of the folks that I work with are not necessarily great marketers. They're not out there with, you know, Infusionsoft fully implemented, right? And a team managing it and a social media manager and all these things. Most of the folks I work with are deep experts in their arena who love what they do and love the people they serve more than anything. And they write these brilliant books to help people. And the best way to serve them is to make sure that those books get into the hands and ears of as many humans as possible that they can help on this planet.
I'm sorry, I'm still here. We had a little glitch in the program there. So basically, it does, it happens. And, you know, I love this format, but every once in a while I go, oh, geez, what just happened there? But anyway, we are here. So basically, if I'm hearing you correctly, that you're dealing a lot with people who are deeply knowledgeable about what they do, but they also have the sense to know that they can't do it on their own. Like, I struggle with that for the longest kind of time because I can do so much, but I was working way too hard. I was exhausted all the time. I was stretched. I was not making the kind of money I was supposed to be making in my mind. And nothing was really getting done to any kind of expert level. You know, we all have this bit of perfectionist in us. So basically, I think what you're saying, and if you are, I agree with you, you have to make the decision if you're going to build this kind of business, whatever this business looks like to you, you've got to invest in it. You can't just kind of throw something at the wall and see what sticks. You have to make a conscious decision to sit down, budget your time, hire a team, find the money, you know, cut off cable, quit going to Starbucks, whatever you have to do. and make and seriously make those investments in both time and money. And I think that's what eludes a lot of people, because they see people like, you know, Brendon Burchard and Jeff Walker just, I mean, knock it out of the park every single time, not realizing that it took them years and years and years to get there. And a ton of money and thought and effort sustain it.
Very, very, very much so. Very much so. And, you know, even more than, because we do talk a lot about investing in your business, investing in your time and all of that. I think that many times where the investment is not put in that could really serve people at a whole new way is actually in doing the pre-work and doing the research and in digging into before you choose what and who you're going to invest with or for, rather than, because we are so passionate about what we do, we're so excited about these things that we do make very emotional decisions. And I'm an intensive, right? I'm a very, very emotionally intensive person, very expressive. You know, I feel at 150,000%. And so speaking from that place, one of the things that I've learned, and it was a hard lesson, is that I needed to allow myself the space and time to do the strategy work and to take the time to make sure that the people that I was working with and that the systems that I was investing in were actually going to be a good fit for me, not just super shiny. And so they, you know, is it going to be a good fit for me? So, you know, many people talk about, well, I have to get Infusionsoft if I have, I do kind of bust on Infusionsoft, sorry, Infusionsoft. And so it's kind of this like gold standard, but it is an incredibly complex and difficult program to use. You do need people to manage it for you.
Extremely expensive. You need to have a plan to work with it. You have to know what you're going to be doing with that. Otherwise, you're paying a lot of money every month for something that's just kind of sitting there and you don't have a clue what to do with it.
Exactly.
I see it all the time. People will come
to
me and say, well, yeah, I'm ready. I've got Infusionsoft. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah,
can you cancel it? Let's start over.
Anytime anybody says that. Yeah, run away, okay? Very few people actually need Infusionsoft. There are so many other options out there that are so much more simple to use, more streamlined, easier to implement. And you know, you can always, when you're at the point where you need Infusionsoft, you should be at the point where you're able to hire a team to handle Infusionsoft. The point where
Absolutely.
You need Infusionsoft. And even then, I'm not convinced, because I have friends who are programmers who look at the back end of Infusionsoft and go, ah! So,
my favorite system.
No.
I mean, I can work in it. I prefer not to.
Exactly. But this, again, is where can we simplify, leverage, make the most use of our time, energy, and talents when we are investing in things? So if we have this book that is there, what are all the different ways that we can use that book? When's the last time you actually sat down and read the darn thing, right? Can your chapters be broken out into either a free product or is a mini course or some kind of even a more extensive course available to pull out of that book? Can you create an online quiz that would be a lead generator from that book? How many quotes pull from the book that could be turned into your evergreen social media posts? Can you turn it obviously into an audiobook that's going to develop a bigger income stream for you, leverage it a new way, allow you the opportunity to get more life from a launch and push that out there to the people that you know and the people that they know and so on and so on? Can you write articles from the content in that book? Is there anything that you could create a hard product out of on that book? This is one of the things that Stephen Covey was very, very good at. Put things on mugs, put things on T-shirts. Why not? Those things are all on-demand printing. They don't cost anything to set up. But yet if somebody's inspired and they want it, you know, on a T-shirt or on a hat or on a mug, well, let them have it, and then that's more for you. So that's where I really want people to take a look to see what are they sitting on. They might be sitting on a lot of gold, leaving a lot of money on the table. And, you know, one of the reasons I focus on audiobooks is kind of that my premier and kind of flagship is because it is one of the easiest and most cost-effective strategies that an author can use. It's not particularly expensive. It's not time-consuming, and the content is already created, and you don't have to create any technology to go with it. So it's very, very downstream, and it's a great place to start. And then you can start to snowball that into many, many other products, streams, marketing assets, et cetera.
And honestly, once you go back to a book that you've written, I mean, if it's a year old or a couple years old, like with anything else, you have a different perspective. You've got different life experiences now. You can go back and read a chapter, read a paragraph, and go, oh, I've got something new to say about that. So I think leaving these books just sit is a huge mistake, especially after you went to all the trouble to create it or have it written for you or however that book came to life. I think leaving it just sit is a massive mistake. And I see it all the time, and I'm not quite sure why that happens.
Well, most of us as people with vision, creative people, one of the hardest things for us, besides finishing a project many times, is going back to something older and getting excited about it again. Because we're always thinking forward. We're always out there into the future, into the vision, and into the big ideas, right? And we also tend to have what I call a lot of shiny ball syndrome, where, you know, we're trying to be focused on something and all of a sudden it's like, ooh, shiny, and we're off onto something else.
Oh, yeah, I'm guilty.
me too. So that's one factor. The other factor is that we tend to be a bit on a nose-to-the-grindstone kind of mentality. Bill Gates famously said that he kept his plate full at 60%. And I don't know too many people that have the discipline to leave that other 40% in their schedules for think time, for creative time, for review, for reflection. And yet, that is actually where we have our best insight, where we cut out the fat and we cut out the things that aren't working for us. That's what we need to do.
I actually do that. It took me, I like to say I'm a recovering workaholic. I'm lying, to everybody and to myself. I'm a workaholic. That's just all there is to it. So what I'm saying now instead of recovering is that I'm a high functioning workaholic. Just sounds so much better. But what I have had to teach myself, to train myself, is in the mornings, even though I live alone and I don't have anybody that I'm responsible for or to, I have trained myself to spend 2 hours before I even begin to think about coming in my office. It used to be that I'd wake up, brush my teeth, take care of the pets, do whatever needed to be done. And I would hit the office, and I didn't leave all day, up and down, wandering around. But, I would just work all day long. Now I spend a solid two hours doing what I loosely term my spiritual practices, which means that I might be meditating, which for me means falling over and drooling. But I'm largely thinking, and I'm, very, very kind of in tune. I'm asking for guidance. I'm plotting. I'm doing all kinds of things. And I'm thinking, and I'm also receiving ideas at that time. So by the time I get in here, 2 hours later, I'm actually feeling quite refreshed, which sounds probably a little backwards, but it works for me.
Not at all. Not at all. If you, Tim Ferriss has a new book out called Tools of Titans, and what he did was through all of his podcast interviews, which tend to be very long-form podcast interviews, 2 hours long, he has gone back to those recordings, and this is also a good example of going back to something we've done previously and mining it for gold. He went through and pulled out the common habits, the common practices, all of these things that where he dissects what makes a world-class performer. And now he's publishing that in this absolutely enormous book that is, already a bestseller and you know, Tim Ferriss, he's very good at this kind of thing. But one of the things that is in that book and is in all of those podcasts is that morning routine. It is that morning time to create that space for thinking, for learning, for meditation, for connecting with yourself or spirit or whatever it is that you are drawn toward, so that we do come into the day focused and clear and ready to roll. And most of these folks also, even if they're extremely busy, they tend to focus on only, you know, 2 to 3 major things that they're going to get done in that day, rather than a massive to-do list that you're just trying to work through and check off. So focusing on those 2 to 3 things that would really make a difference if you focused on them and got them accomplished in that day.
I have learned to do that.
So that's
as well.
Yeah.
I focus on the money things, you know, and I will actually, when I'm making my list, probably the night before, you know, things that I must do, you know, the next day, I will actually put dollar signs next to the things that are going to make me money. They're obviously
I love that.
Going.
That's great.
They're going to go to the top of the
That's
list,
awesome.
Aren't they? So, but I used to do that. I mean, inveterate reader, inveterate, you know, checklist maker, and I would go to bed so exhausted because I would, you know, be laying there trying to get my monkey brain to shut down so I could go to sleep, and just going through my list and going, oh, I didn't do that, and I didn't get this done, and I was beating myself up, and I realized that that's just ridiculous. So I stopped doing that. Took a little bit of training, but, you know, like what you just commented on, now I pick 3, maybe 4 if I've got a really hectic schedule, but 3 major things, and then everything is a subcategory under, you know, 1, 2, and 3, obviously, but I tend to get those done. I get them done in short order because I'm focused, intensely focused, and then, you know, at the end of the evening, I was like, whew, I had a good day. But it, you know, it takes some mindfulness. You have to really be mindful about what you're doing.
Absolutely. They couldn't have said it any better. That's exactly it.
So we have, oh, wow, this hour is going fast. We've only got about 9 more minutes. So what, I mean, for our audience right now, what is some of the best advice that you can give our audience now and for people who will be downloading later about getting started with audiobooks, because that really was the focus of our talk? Where would they start? I mean, you've already talked about some of the things that, you know, they really need to look out for, but what if somebody says, okay, I am going to invest in this, and I know they need to get your checklist, but, you know, is there something there that maybe you really want to stress where they start?
Well, in an ideal situation, let's take the case that somebody has a book launch coming up. My favorite place to work with an author is when their book is just about done with the editing process. So at that phase, that's where you're going to be looking at when you're going to be launching, what your launch strategy is going to be, how are you going to get the word out. And that's my actually, just before it goes to editing is my favorite place. Let me back that up. I lied. just before it goes to editing is my favorite place, actually, because there's a piece of advice I like to let authors know before they send their book to an editor. And before you send your book to an editor, one of the things that you should be doing as an author is reading your book out loud. When you read your book out loud, it doesn't have to be to an audience, just to yourself, you will catch things that you will not catch when you are reading it just with your eyeballs. Every
well,
time.
We write differently than we speak, don't we?
Completely, many times. But yet,
right.
It's the books that sound like somebody is speaking, especially nonfiction books. Those are the books that people resonate with. When it feels like somebody is sitting across the table from you having a cup of coffee, those are the kinds of books that we listen to over and over again, that we feel connected with the author, that we want to share about, that we want to talk about. So before you send your book to an editor, that first editing process that you do yourself after you've gone through and spell checked it and all that good stuff, after you've proofread it with your eyeballs, you want to proofread it with your voice. So speak it out loud and go through an editing process after you, you know, speak it out loud, make any changes to really make sure that the book is conversational and that it can be spoken well. Then you send it to your editor, of course, and go through that entire process. That will not only result in a better book, but obviously it'll also result in a better audiobook. So the audiobook process, what we do is we need the Kindle. We need the Kindle version in order to do the audiobook. So once we have the Kindle version, usually that just kind of sits in the background before you do your formal launch. This is one of those other best practices that a lot of authors have a lot of anxiety because they don't know. And that is that it's okay for your book to sit on Amazon without doing a major launch for a little while. It's okay to have a soft launch where your book is just kind of hanging out on Amazon and you don't talk about it and you don't tell anyone about it, because that allows you to test your systems, to put things in place and not have that crazy, crazy amount of pressure of, oh, holy crap, I've got to get this out. There's like a window of opportunity. You create the window of opportunity. It's not when the book goes up on Amazon. It's whenever you say your launch is going to be. That's, if you think about this in terms of brick-and-mortar businesses, most brick-and-mortar businesses do not have a grand opening the first day they're open. They have a soft launch. They work through their systems. They work out a few bugs. They make sure everything is in place. And then they send out all of their marketing and press releases and go out on the Internet and all that for a grand opening. So that is another big piece I always want to make sure that authors know. As for the audiobook, we can start production. It takes about 90 days for us to produce an audiobook. We like to leave that amount of time so, nobody gets their hair on fire. It's all in the world of business oasis. We want to make sure that people are being fed and nurtured by their business as much as their business feeds and nurtures other people. That's really the whole central concept of a business oasis. So during that time while we're doing production, if somebody's working with us on the marketing side of things, we also will, that's when you or us, whoever's doing it, you want to be writing your copy. You want to be putting your social media posts together, both the ones that you're going to put out and also the ones that you're going to share with your tribe, asking them to share when it comes to your grand opening, your grand launch of your book. So, and you also will be writing email copy, asking people to share with their email lists, and also for your own, big or small, doesn't matter. You still want to do that. And more important than anything, you want to be collecting people for your launch team. You want to have people in a tribe. You want to have them organized and ready to go, mobilized, so that when the launch comes, you've got people who are sharing all over the place. And, you know, for many books, if not most books, it's okay that it's your mom or your friends or, you know, your coworkers or whatever, whoever. The more people, the better when it comes to a book launch. As you continue to develop as an entrepreneur and you develop a tribe of, fellow influencers and colleagues and all of that, your launch teams get more and more robust, and we start to break them out into categories that we treat in some different ways. But when your first launch or even your second one, depending on where you're in business, you're just trying to, have people who are willing to share and make it easy for them to share when it comes time to launch your book. So then when you have the big launch of your book, you're pushing out a lot of information all at once, trying to get as many downloads as possible in a short period of time to get that bestseller status. That's phase one. Phase two is the launch of your audiobook, which is generally anywhere from a month to 3 months after the launch of your main book. And that's an extension of your main launch. You're going to be utilizing that launch team again in that process. Then there's a third wave of launching your book, and this is where people don't tend to go. And the third wave of launching your book is where you start really utilizing your book as an asset. And strategically, that can be a lot of different ways. I mentioned a whole bunch of different ways to use the content of your book, and that's at the point where you want to be looking at that point. So anybody who wants to find out some more about any of this, if you go to launchyouraudiobook.com, I go into depth about all of these strategies.
I'm sitting here just fascinated. I'm truly fascinated. I knew a good bit of this, but some of it is just brand new to me, and I thank you for that. I mean, every time I have one of these conversations each Friday, I learn something new, and I have that aha, you know, that big giant light bulb that goes off over your head. Well, that's been going on and off a couple times here while you're talking.
Oh, good.
So thank you so much for that. But tell people again where they can find you, because I think the information that you're sharing today is very, very important.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Well, my main website is startsomethingcreativebizsolutions.com, big old long URL, startsomethingcreativebizsolutions.com, and you can download the guide and the best practices at launchyouraudiobook.com. And if you go to, if you just put in Tina Dietz into your Google, I'm pretty much I'm going to show up first. So you can connect with me on social media too.
Good for you. I'm the same way. You can't throw a stick on the internet without hitting me. It's a good thing. It really is. Listen,
definitely.
Tina,
thank you so much for having me, my dear.
Oh, it has been enjoyable and incredibly informative, and I really appreciate you being with me here today. It's been wonderful chatting with you. I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways, and I'm hoping that a lot of them will connect with you and learn from you as much as I did. And everybody, the show will be available, those of you in the chat room, the show will be available for download in about 10 or 15 minutes. And you can also find us on iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Tina Dietz, and I will see you next week. Tina, thank you so much. I mean, you have been a phenomenal guest.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.